You're listening to Sound Poetry. I am your host, David Gilmore. This is Sound Poetry on Radio Tacoma, KTAH 101.9 LPFM. I'm your host, David Gilmore, and today we're happy to have with us poet Christina Butcha, who owns her own press, the Blue Cactus Press, but a poet in her own right, and so we would love to hear her reading poems today. And so, hello, Christina. Welcome to Sound hello. Poetry.
Thank you. I work at King's Books in Tacoma, which is owned by Sweet Pea.
Oh,
Flaherty.
Sweet Pea. Yes, I know. Yeah, I've had many meetings there. And
yeah, he's wonderful.
Has it opened up for meetings again?
No, not yet. We're all still digital. So you can order online, you can order through the website or over the phone, but we're not open to the public yet.
King's Books, what a great place to work, and what a nice clientele too, when it's open, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Would you like to tell us a little about your press? It's interesting
sure.
to have someone who is managing a press.
Yeah, I've been running Blue Cactus Press for 3 years now, and we specialize in works that deal with the undercurrents of humanity, things we don't really talk about. So a lot of our work centralizes on things like depression, anxiety, racism, social justice, health, allyship, things like that. So what we're really trying to do is just bring to light and to the forefront of dialogue topics and conversations that generally get pushed behind doors or kind of go untalked about in public. And I think it's to the detriment of our collective community. So that's what we focus on. We do have a lot of poetry, of course, because I am a poet and my community is full of poets. But we also publish nonfiction and a little bit of fiction as well. So we're kind of diverse and not trying to really stick to one genre per se. Today, the work that I'm going to bring up is more to do with familial loss and anxiety and frustrations and things like that.
Very good. Would you like to start by reading one that you've chosen?
Absolutely. I'm going to start with a poem called Water Witching. Water Witching. In a bathtub in downtown El Paso, I run my thumbs along the underside of my feet, pressing into the arches. I close my eyes and ask Kiko, "What are you trying to tell me? How do I even begin to tell this story?" But I can't hear him over the drip of the tap. Steam rises and the water surface becomes a doorway to other world where Kiko still flexes on the lawn. He be slick back and citizen in a class A uniform, hard to miss. Nana rolls her eyes from the edge of the tub, blows smoke onto the bathroom mirror. "I'm tired, mijita." And I know she means tired of ladling husbands and sons into holy water squeeze bottles, but it doesn't rain in El Paso, and the women in our family don't die. We float back to the surface like masa, ready for the husk. We are divining rods, sussing out the wellspring, the chink between tile and basin, where we lower our faces and pray for strength enough to haul our bodies and our men back up from the water.
Interesting. You've chosen one that deals with an undercurrent, the water beneath the water witching. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had some experience living in the Southwest?
Yeah, I'm from New Mexico, actually. So I grew up in New Mexico, right on the border, actually, in El Paso, Texas. And then my family moved into New Mexico as I got a little bit older. But I'm primarily from the Southwest.
And do you travel down there frequently and spend time?
Not as much as I would like to. And the last few times I've been down there have been mostly for funerals and things like that. The things that are a bit harder to deal with.
Did you grow up listening to poetry there, and did you start writing there?
I started writing in middle school and high school, but I wasn't really exposed to it until I was a teenager. I had a really wonderful teacher, Jonathan Wall, in high school, who's been a mentor of mine for much of my adult life and a good friend. And he's really who opened up my world of what poetry can be and what it can do for somebody. So,
who were the poets that were early influences for you?
So I was introduced to the Beat Generation in high school, and that was, I think, a really great experience for me, because until then I wasn't very much exposed to narratives that go against the grain or that push back against the norm or that subvert the system, whether that system is political or educational or social. And so being exposed to the Beat poets, Gary Snyder and Allen Ginsberg, Jack Kerouac, was really monumental for me. Yeah. And the older I got, the more I realized that that wasn't necessarily the niche in poetry that I found myself wanting to write in and build community in, but it did help me just sort of break out into my own when I was younger, which was a good thing.
Would you like to choose another one that you have?
The next one I'm going to read is called Portuguese Route. I'm very affected by Spanish culture, and just being from the Southwest and being a Chicana, I love so many things about Southwestern culture and Mexican culture and Spanish culture. And last year I had the opportunity to travel to Spain and Portugal. And so this is one of the poems that came from that experience. Portuguese Route. A lone dog bays in the distance as I watch the bread man make his morning deliveries. He drives in reverse along the dirt road, having missed some of Wella's house, and everyone can feel his too big van lumbering across their porches. He jumps down from his van, leaving the driver's side door open, and shoves a loaf of bread under an upturned bowl on a stone wall. A rooster crows nearby, and I know he's already haggard from his morning's work. Dog, bread man, rooster, each tired before the sun rises over us, all aware they'll be pulled back at the neck before the day ends. I pull my handkerchief over my face as the bread man drives past me. I look up, peering through the dust. I find my path again. I keep walking.
So did you go on a particular route that passed villages such as this?
Yeah, I walked the Camino de Santiago and I took the Portuguese route. So I walked through many villages like this, actually.
Yes, those days of bread man coming and putting an unpackaged loaf.
Yes.
By the door or here under a covering to keep the birds perhaps from pecking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or the any animal. Yes, after the upturned bowl on a stone wall, a rooster crows. In a way, there's a couple of birds there, the rooster and the crow. And I thought, yeah, that's a wonderful juxtaposition there, because it brings to mind why it's put under the bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The truck, what kind of big van was this? Was it a big lumbering van that went across what, the concrete porches?
Yeah, it was just honestly a big white van. Is just a normal modern van, sort of driving really fast through this tiny village with cobbled streets, and it was just interesting to watch him work while I walked a couple of blocks away.
Yes, and you didn't know perhaps back then, pulling a kerchief across your face, that you'd be doing that a little bit more a year ahead,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It does make you sad that you're not able to travel with the same freedom right now?
A bit, but I'm 6 months pregnant right now, and so I wouldn't be traveling much anyway. So I think I came to terms with that a couple of months ago. But I do travel a lot, and I hike a lot. And so it has been an adjustment, just mentally slowing down in that respect.
Yes, you're going to have your hands filled for a while before you travel again.
Exactly.
Everybody, even those with freedom,
perhaps are limited in their travel for quite some time now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that poem very much. It gave me of the openness and of the foreignness, this whaler's house and a whaler who had a house that he had to back up on. Very good idea of having to back up. We all need to back up once in a while, don't we? Now, would you read another one?
Sure, yeah. The next poem is called Oil. Oil. I stop moving long enough to lean against the balcony. Third floor, looking out at freshly polluted water on Foss Waterway. Grease coats the surface, glistening like fat pooling on a dinner plate, only it's not. It's water. It's pearlescent beneath an approaching kayak. The kayaker's paddle rises and falls in figure eights, and I catch myself rooting for them. Someone determined to see it through for the rest of us. As if participation with implies recovery of, despite disappointment and oil all over everything.
Right. Very topical about the pollution of one of Tacoma's waterways. I like the idea of using the ampersand after the figure eights. It has a sort of figure eight to it, which that was very, very graphic. Very good. And did this was an actual scene. You saw this from a balcony, did you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty common on Foss Waterway.
Sure
it's
it
not,
is.
It's more uncommon to see the waterway clear of oil, which is disappointing.
Certainly is, yes. I mentioned the poem that you wrote on how to build a couplet, which intrigued me very much. And I think that would be an interesting one to read and perhaps explain some of the difficulty of. It's more difficult than some poems because, after all, it's full of metaphors and symbolic things. So.
Sure, yeah. How to build a couplet. The narrative begins by giving up your body. Sit down and build a bridge of words from your belly to your wrist. Chew the corners off. This isn't about precision, it's about taste. I'm telling you the truth. You must call the raccoons up from under the porch and let them witness your worship. The next night, and every night thereafter, try to wake in the corner of the room. Look sideways. Drag yourself to the letterbox. Let your hands claw like a bone knife. This is communion. Sleepwalker, listen. This is how you build a couplet. Let each line consume you. Become a ghost. Collect grass clippings. Choke on grammar and spit it out behind the house. Make sure to show your teeth, too, when the owl comes looking. Only then will it carry your message out and into the night.
So in the absence of carrier pigeons, you chose an owl to be a carrier bird, right?
The owl is actually a choice, a different sort of choice. In many cultures, owls are the symbol of death and bad omens, and just when you see one, you shouldn't talk about it. And so this was kind of a nod towards, you might, no matter what you're trying to accomplish in a poem, sometimes you have to abandon it and move forward, yeah.
Yes, and though this is on building a couplet, and there are some couplets in it, they're not all couplets.
I'm not great at following structures and form, and that's kind of a nod to that. I think for me, this is a poem about noticing. When I'm talking about how to build a couplet, I was struggling. I've been trying to utilize more varied poetic styles into my work, and I struggle with adhering to rules in general in life, in writing, in anything. And so this poem is kind of about, even when you're trying to force your way down one path, kind of understanding that you can't necessarily, you're not going to be able to move down that path just because you want to. And it's about noticing. I think for me, poetry is much more about taking the time to notice and to look around you and those small details. And so there are maybe two couplets, I think, in this poem, and the rest are made up differently. So.
Yes, an interesting idea, because it will jolt the reader when it's about building couplets, but they're not in that particular form. Yeah.
Right.
You let each line consume you anyway in a poem. When we hear it orally, it's hard for the listener anyway to know that form, unless, of course, it's one of the really noticeable forms, whether it's villanelle or something like that, you know, or with rhyming schemes and so on. Whereas you don't particularly choose to rhyme your poems. And so that certainly goes back to the Beat era. I don't know of too many that did rhyme their works, but let each line consume you. And perhaps the phrase should have a good bite at you too.
Yeah.
Very good. That's a very interesting poem. I'll read it a few more times, I'm sure, before I put it away. Have you got some other selected that you would like to? I'm enjoying very much listening to your work.
Absolutely. Thank you. The next poem I'm going to read is called "The Only Solution Is to Jump." The only solution is to jump. Please. Don't let it be a slow unraveling. Let it be a scorpion waiting in ambush beneath the recliner. On second thought, let it be anything but poverty, or a car crash, or a beak sharp enough to take my good eye. Just not a kayak overturned in shallow water. Pray it never comes down to being pinned. Or perpetual cold, or living in the aftermath of nuclear disaster. Woe if it be motherless. Imagine if it was snakes, a whole den of rattlers, cobras, or water moccasins. Oh God, what if it is water moccasins? More probably, it will be a painful awareness of cognitive decline, or torture, a toying cos, a slipping from the mountainside, the punch and clink of gravel clipping cliff, my only trace.
No owls in that one, but a lot of dangers. A lot of
yes. This is a risking poem about fear. Fears.
And there is a fright. How many people will recoil at that rattler's cobra's water moccasins? There's a lot of phobias against snakes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And of course, it is in our time one of the most painful things to imagine, the loss of cognitive awareness. It can happen so slowly. Yeah, very good. I really felt the force of, I was consumed by lots of those lines, put it that way, okay? But no slow unraveling. Scorpions appear. No owls this time, but certainly the potence of death, of frightening ends. The kayak one, that one, again, that horrible feeling. I watch kayakers in very, very rocky water, and it just makes me quiver to think that any one of them could have such an accident.
You know, I always think of the book about the brothers in logging territory. Oh, the name of it is escaping me. But whenever I imagine drowning, it's being pinned down in shallow water. And it terrifies me.
Oh, sometimes a great notion. The Ken Kesey book, yes.
Ken Kesey, yes, thank you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yes, no, that movie made many people, I think, recoil and grip the seat.
Yeah.
I read the book too, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That book is on my list of books to get to, and I never quite get there, but I will one day. I do love Ken Kesey very much.
Yeah, forceful writing. Very forceful writing, mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to read yet another one? We
sure,
have
yeah.
A good time for hearing another one, certainly.
Sure. Directions for Companion. Walk into a lake, that is to say, a standing body, and let the foam drag at your knees. It will pull you down below the surface into the mud where kelp waits with a razor's edge, reminding you it's still winter here and you are basalt, not blue, even when lumbering into the beaver's den. So ask it for permission first. Ask the sky for snow. Ask the bear to build a wall of your waterlogged limbs. Ask to hunt with sealskin, to move the logs yourself, to sink, and then build a raft and break it because you like to watch me and I enjoy destruction, repetition. Let me catch you leaning into it. Smear oil on your face and light a match. Ask to be an oyster. Swim to the middle of the lake and remember, it's winter here and no one will build you a roof.
So is this one that you wrote recently? Well, you mentioned the Ken Kesey book, and I felt some images that were a little reminiscent of that. Mm. Did you write this one while you were by a shore?
No, I wrote this in a poetry workshop with youth from Write 253. It's a youth literacy organization here in Tacoma. And it was a workshop on water. The prompt was to not use water or most words associated with water in your poem.
I see. Mm-hmm. But intimate the wateriness.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a poem really about self-reliance. It obviously has nothing to do with a companionship. It's about doing for yourself and kind of just standing up and recognizing the uglier parts of yourself and signing up anyway, being on board anyway, voting for yourself, voting for your own determination, and kind of just showing up for yourself like you would a friend when it's ugly, when it hurts, when you don't want to. You know, loyalty, as my partner Michael would say, loyalty only matters when it's hard. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of what that's about.
Have you gone to many poetry conferences and the Centrum, for example? Did you ever go there?
Well, I work with Write 253 as a teaching artist, and so I do participate in a lot of their poetry workshops, and I help out with their summer writing camps and things like that. And this particular workshop was held at the Washington State History Museum here in Tacoma, and so it's just a really great experience. Write 253 puts a lot of thought into the details of where they're meeting, why they're meeting, who they're meeting with, what they're presenting to youth, giving youth opportunities to show up in ways that are meaningful to them. I have had a lot of experience with Write 253 and I'm very thankful for it, but I generally don't have as much time as I would like to attend workshops and conferences and things like that.
Is this an annual conference or workshop time at the museum?
Well, the writing camp that we did with Write 253 has been at the History Museum for a couple of years in a row. I'm not sure if we'll have it next year. It'll all just kind of depend on, actually, I guess it would have been this year. It would have been probably next month, but with COVID-19 and all the health concerns with meeting in groups of people, I doubt we will have it this year. So, at least in the same capacity that we've had it in the past. So.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And do you teach there, or do you present a poetry session there?
I am a teaching artist with them, and so I sometimes teach poetry workshops when I can. I absolutely do. I'm teaching a workshop with a group of youth through Write 253 in a couple of weeks over Zoom, so that'll be a great experience. It usually is. Yeah. But I don't often present my own writing. Our workshops at Write 253 center much more on the youth experience and their voices and their expression. And so we have model poems and model texts, and most teaching artists with Write 253 are also writers, but we try to maintain a focus on the youth. My stuff can wait. I would love to just be a part of amplifying this experience and this voice, and that's often enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you spend a great deal of time reading your poems out loud?
I do, yeah. And I do perform around town and things like that. But part of my editing process is to read it out loud, just because I'm a very vocal person. I enjoy the intricacies of sound and recording and things like that. And so I absolutely incorporate reading my poems aloud into my editing and my writing process.
Yeah, the music is more evident in the reading aloud, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I think, read silently for meaning, but there's more of a being, a performance element to poetry that I think the reading aloud gives it its place much better than just sitting on page.
Yeah, I think there's place for both in the world of poetry. There are some poets I know whose work centers more on the visual aspects, and when you're just left looking at it for 10 or 15 minutes, you can pull out some really incredible things from it versus hearing it aloud. And then there's other people whose work, they don't ever even print it out. It never gets printed and never gets put on paper. It's something that has been meant from the very first moment to be read aloud. I enjoy the variations, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Would you like to read another one?
I have one more long poem. This poem is called Heart Poem, and it was another poem that I wrote while I was traveling. Heart Poem was written after I got off the Camino de Santiago, but I was still in Spain. And it's very near and dear to me, and it's a poem very much for my the people close to me as much as it is for me. Heart Poem, dedicated to myself and to Nick Faust. A body turned inside out by a city. My body, in Madrid. I was turned inside out in Madrid. A hand slammed, slipped down my throat, elbow deep, grasping at me, hiding inside of me, waiting in a hostel in Portugal where I was inward. In Spain, I was pulled out. And what's to keep a city from turning a body anyway? An arm flexed between teeth, down the hatch, broken lock, forced to turn out, trick, turn the volume, back up, turn up, rejoin. Or not, says Carrie, but I'll miss you. Two cities later, a video call with a ghost, a text message. I would like to go with you anywhere and see how we do. An existence in a vacuum, disassembled because vacuums always break. It's their destiny. Only YouTube can fix them. This one's still in the box. I just wanted to be touched. Jonathan Rowe, God damn you. What a trivial way to treat the only woman who ever drank from the well. Only it's not trivial. We yearn for it, Nick. And in you, I have always seen my partner. But all relationships end somewhere, Alyssa, and I do not chase, and I don't know is as definite an answer as I'll ever need, Sandeep, though you'll always be my best friend. But it should have been a yes, a fuck yes, Adam, or it doesn't count. I should have stayed in Madrid. I should have put my bathing suit in my bag in Barcelona. I should have changed my flight. I should never have canceled those plans with my mother, but I did, and I tried, and now I have no regrets. And now it's time to let the ghosts go, all of them. Release them from the center, way down deep in the gut, the center of the Tootsie Pop, watch them fly away, and it will feel good. It feels good, doesn't it? To let the juice from the nectarine drip down your chin. To hold the watermelon slice in your hand. Oh, triangle of pink and green glory, help me find my father. Where is he? He's in my brother, right here inside. Justin, why am I here? To write. Why am I here? To breathe. It is enough to just exist. Matt, you are enough. Tina, I'm right here. Heather, I'm right here. Me, I will love you. I'm in Barcelona, sitting against the back wall in some cafe with floor-to-ceiling red velvet, and it feels so good against the back of my head. It's so soft, Melinda. The tile underfoot is saturated with color. Forest green, milky white, deep purple of dried fig. I slip my shoes off. Feel the coal and glaze, the hardness inside of me transpose onto the bathroom mirrors. There are five positioned along three planes connected, my past and future selves looking out at me. I order an Americano. I let the sadness and the ember of my own love fill me up all at once from my own wells. And I think, Silvio, meet Hannah. Don't turn your face away. Let them see you. Be a hot mess. Be a bitch. Nicole, say no. Be a child. Warm the floor with the soles of your feet. They walked across Portugal into Spain for you. Your back withstood, and I trusted my body. You released yourself of obligation. I trusted my gut. You navigated, bitch. Navigated. I asked myself to focus, to be sparse with words. I turned inside out on the Plaza del Sol, a universe unto myself, walking among thousands of other universes, moving like blood cells through veins, my place, reed in significance in the universe broadcast, speck human dust, Moses, turned inside out. The universe grabbed my head and turned my face like a child, forcing me to confront the truth. It pulled me meta out of my own skin. I stepped out of myself. Saw that we are all speck human dust universes, millions of us adding up to something bigger. Some coffee cup or anchovy tin in the Gothic Quarter with no bathing suit, thinking about the enormity of it all. And down below in my own skin, I asked myself how I can live as my best, truest self. How do I live well as my own speck human dust universe? After being granted, mercifully, this glimpse behind the veil. We're minuscule, Mikey. And I know you don't like being called Mikey, but sometimes it suits you. You can be so sweet sometimes. And we're so small. Yesterday, I watched two men rollerblade in hot pants in front of the Fuente del Ángel Caído. Thinking about it helps me remember we still matter. We are complex. We love, break, stretch ourselves taffy thin, and I ask myself again, how can I live well? And Calderon says, if I must learn what I already know, that pleasure is a flame soon turned to ashes by a breath of wind, then I must seek that flame that burns externally, the happiness, the joy that is not measured by the merely temporary. So I do not fill my body. Let it be empty. Leave everything on the page. Ask it like Mr. Togomi about the here and now. Let the yarrow stalks guide me, because I don't even know the name of this cafe, Jonah. But maybe it doesn't matter, because you never left me, Sigung. I feel you everywhere. You and I are in everything. I am every place across all time, booth talking with my past and present selves from Portugal to Spain, sipping coffee in a diner in Honolulu above Chinatown, watching the line cook flip hash browns sizzling in oil. Waking up on the porch in New Mexico, morning air so crisp it cuts me and the horses still testing the electric fence. In a tent in India, sick. In uniform in Washington, watching my own back, watching the back of David's head. Alfredo, I got you. Carrie, I got you. Sandeep, Brendan, Heather, please, someone go get him before he pulls the trigger. I have my brother's face, Justin. Stern disposition, but I'm softer. I tell myself, be gentle this time around, Tina, and then rest. You can try again tomorrow.
Very, very heated, emotional poetry that.
Thank you.
Much sensuality, visceral even. Oh, Christina, It was delightful to hear you read your poetry.
Thank you for
poetry.
Having me. Thank
Much
you for the opportunity.
It is so hot that people had to feel the flame. We're very happy to have had you here today. This is Sound Poetry with Christina Butcher. I'm your host, Dave Gilmore.